drive to left. Back goes Edwards to the track at the wall. He's hit it out. Can you believe Derek Lee? Oh! Five hits. But Derek Lee, his 17th home run. What a game he's had. Wow.
You're losing Burnett and you lost Walker.
That one is hit down the right field line. Deep. That ball is a grand slam. Nathy Perez has hit a grand slam. Nathy Perez with his 8th home run of the year. And it is 8-4 Cubs.
I told you that guy was a great part of this ball club.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time to remember this crap with Mike Donahue. Mike, how are you doing?
Good, Andy. How are you?
I'm good. We are about to spin the wheel of crap and see what year in illustrious, fairly recent Cub history we're going to discuss. But first, this podcast is presented by Manscaped. Support for Remember This Crap is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming, champions of the world. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped just launched their fourth-generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right, the 4.0. Join more than 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code REMEMBER20. At manscaped.com. Once again, that's remember20 at manscaped.com. And Mike, if you buy something, don't do what Kyle did. Don't buy it and then forget to use the code.
Whether that's a lawnmower, any accessories, any merchandise, anything on their website, do yourself a favor for starters, even if you don't give a shit about us. We get the promotion too, but for your own benefit, get the discount, remember20.
So now you and Kyle are both fond of the boxer shorts that they sent us.
Absolutely.
That's what Kyle went and bought. The night he hadn't even, I think he like tried them on and immediately ran to the computer and bought another pair of boxer shorts because he had just gotten the stuff. And then that night he was telling Sam and I that he bought stuff and forgot to use them.
I have a pretty healthy supply of boxer briefs, pretty healthy inventory. So I did not need to purchase any more right away. However, I do share Kyle's enthusiasm because, I generally get excited about putting on brand new boxer briefs anyway. But I will honestly say that the Manscaped briefs were very slick, very comfortable. They almost felt like silk, and I'm not just saying that. They were instantly popular for me, and I'm going to keep that in mind because they're cool. It's good design, and it's kind of funny to have that. The lawnmower itself was pretty exciting because we got that too. And in full disclosure, I am a manscaper. I know there might be some people that are like, whatever, Huey, you fat, hairy old Gen Xer, your generation, you don't do that. You don't go. I do. And I have been, and it might be funny. 10 years ago, I might have laughed, but my wife and I have two lovely children, and at some point in the last 6 years, we decided that we would not like any more than the two children that we had. So I had made an appointment for Dr. Snip Snip and was going to take care of that, and I was not too concerned. I do have faith in modern medical science. And the only thing that concerned me, though, were the instructions from the doctor that I would have to shear myself, which I had never at that point in the 44 years of my life, never actually held any implement in that region at that point in my life. It went fine. I had the surgery, went fine. We still have two lovely kids, family's growing. But I discovered that I quite enjoyed keeping it clean down there. And so I became a convert. and even went so far as to shave my chest. And there it is. I know that it's very popular among younger sets, but it's definitely something that I enjoy. And since I received my lawnmower, which I love the name for reasons that we've talked about before, it's safer. I'm not doing that straight blade that I had been doing, and it's it really leaves it nice down there. So I just wanted to share my personal anecdote, but it's great stuff, folks. If you do keep yourself trimmed down there, it's a great product. Remember 20, the lawnmower.
Yes, remember 20. All right, so better finish the the thing that I'm contractually obligated to read.
Manscaped. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I go
off that's fine.
With my deeply personal vasectomy story?
Manscaped engineered the ultimate groin body trimmer by focusing on intelligent functionality and an incredibly comfortable grooming experience. The fourth generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. This upgraded trimmer includes a multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock. It also gives you the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. The Lawnmower 4.0 even allows you to customize your trim length through additional guard lengths with sizes 1 through 4. Did I mention wireless charging? The new wireless charging system uses electromagnetic induction, which can help battery length last longer. It's time to get your own ball hair and body trimmer with Manscaped to make me time the best time and enhance your confidence with some nice smooth boys. Get 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code REMEMBER20 at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. All right. So now it is time to spin the wheel and see who we get. Now, the last episode was a fun one. We got the 1998...
It was great.
1989. I kept saying that. We got the 1989
Cubs.
You
said that in the early podcast. Mm-hmm.
Which means our only rule is we will not do 1988 or 1990 this
week. And I just want to share kind of where we're at because I was in my head. You know, we're doing 32 seasons, and I think I may have misspoken about some playoff seasons and 500 seasons. That was the first playoff season we had done, but it was actually the third Cubs team in five episodes that was over 500. I did some quick back of the envelope math. Like I was a regular Arthur Laffer creating whatever the Reaganomics policy was. But in the 32 seasons, the Cubs have actually finished 511 times to 34.38 percentage. And we have done five episodes, and we have actually done three teams that finished 500, 6%. Yeah, we did. Our first 2 weeks, we did 92, 97. We were on the right path. They were both under 500. 01 was a good team. 09 threw us because that was technically a 500 team. Yeah. So we're above the pace there. So if you're a betting man, we might get a crappy one. I'm ready for a crappy one because this is what we do.
So you're saying things are about to get bleak.
But I think we're it's time for that. After the high of 89, I almost don't want another good season because doing 89 last one was so enjoyable. Just to run through the numbers, 32 seasons, Cubs made six playoffs between 1980 and 2011 in the five episodes we've done. That was the only one. So we went 18.75% is the odds that we will otherwise get going into the season of getting a playoff team. Now we're already up to 20, so that's probably normalized. If we did 1984, for starters, it'd be at least a two-hour podcast. I'm ready for it if we do it. Personally, I would rather do that. I'd rather have that spaced out because it was a lot of fun. It would be fun either way, but you know we're gonna have to basically shovel through a lot of crap.
Yes.
And so I'm ready. I'm not just bracing myself. I'm ready to go wild on some ass-eating team that.
I'm hoping for a Jim Riggleman season.
Yeah, that'd be good, Riggs. I've thought of some Riggs stuff lately, so.
Some snippy producer at the Score got mad at me today because of Jim Riggleman, so I'm ready for it.
Oh, on Twitter?
Yes.
Did you know that before Joe Madden, that Jim Riggleman was the longest serving Cubs manager in our lifetime?
Yeah, I believe that. If you
go by just seasons, Madden equaled him, did not surpass him. But Madden certainly did more games because, for starters, the 95 Cubs team only played 144 because of the strike. But, Riggleman.
Well, Parkins and Spiegel had him on today to talk Tony La Russa. And my only thing was, ooh, that'll be electric. Jim Riggleman might be the dullest person ever. And they got mad. And basically said, it was more entertaining than you've ever blogged, which is possibly true.
Who's the, do you not want to say, was it Shane?
No, I don't know who it was. It's some, you know.
Not even the guy they.
I doubt it. I don't even think it's like the real producer. It's probably some intern. It's
some lackey.
Sit by the ear. Okay. Tweet something out, smart boy.
I will say that might be true, but I do know Jim Riggleman, who was divorced and a decent looking guy for a manager, supposedly was just a few steps behind Mark Grace on the trail.
Was he a Coxman?
I believe. And this may have been like out, like where Steve Dahl had mentioned during just an over the air broadcast about Mark Grace supposedly standing up on a table and obviously lying for effect, but proving a point by saying, I'm the only guy, or we're the only team in the league where the manager gets the most trim. So.
Well, that. So, Joe Torre wasn't managing at the time?
No, not the Cubs. And Herman Frank's underrated Casanova, but still not
so
as,
you,
not as much.
So you've read the book Ball 4, correct?
I have. Years ago, only once, though. Not
there's a great line in there where a player is describing a female that they saw in the hotel, and he says that she looked like Joe Torre with tits. So, there you go.
Got it. I got the reference now. I will not forget that one now.
No, I've never forgotten it. I read it as a teenager and thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever heard.
Stuck out. Somehow I lost track of that, but I will now commit that one to a rememory.
Yes. All right, here we go. We're going to spin the wheel and see what we get. That's going to be 1984 because
I guess I'll still be ready. Ooh. Okay.
All right, it is.
Dusty
Baker's favorite season, 2005. I guess he probably hated 2006 more. But 2005 Cubs. So five, what do you got? Five instant facts.
Goodbye Sammy Sosa. Hello Jeremy Burnitz. 2005. There was a fat guy by the name of Wild Bill Holman who for some reason walked all the way from Arizona to Wrigley Field on foot in support of diabetes funding and Ron Santo, of course. It's 2005. Derek Lee. God help me if I'm wrong. I don't think I am. Had a monster season.
Yes, he did.
Because 06 was when he got hurt. Okay, good. Didn't want to screw you around with that one. Carlos Zambrano, opening day starter, the same day that the referees decided to let Sean May push around James Augustine all night in the NCAA men's championship game earlier in the day. Carlos Zambrano, although he had like an 8-run cushion, did not pitch long enough on opening day to qualify for the victory. Zambrano obviously was the ace. And 2005 was the day that was the year in which Colorado Rocky third baseman Brad Hopp once hit a line drive off of Mark Pryor's shoulder and into Lake Michigan.
Pretty much.
There are your five facts. Very random and not very telling of the season.
So 2005, over under on Kerry Wood's starts. If I gave you 12.5, you going over or under?
I'm going to go under because I seem to recall a 2-month stretch in that season where there were all of these nobodies that were pitching, like Juan Mateo, and I think Carlos Marmol debuted as a starter. I'm going to go under.
It was under 10. 10 starts for Kerry Wood. He did pitch in 21 games. That was the year where more than once the Cubs would come back, you know, a WGN or 2005. Was that Fox Sports Net in Chicago?
The local?
They would come back from commercial in like the second inning, and all of a sudden there'd be a new pitcher on the mound for the Cubs because either Kerry Wood or Mark Pryor had had to go bye-bye, and that was not good.
You could probably find that because I'm going to guess with Wood it was very well may have been his last game of the year. You never know. He could have come back. In Wood's defense, Wood made it through a full season for the first time in 2002. And he may have done it in 03 when he had a really good year, but he may have done a quick stint on the DL. And then I don't know, he may have done it in 04 too, but that was kind of it for any sort of sustained run of relative health, because as you've just pointed out, 05 was a very much of a partial season, and it wasn't long after that he was converted to a reliever. So,
Who made more starts in 2005, Rich Hill or Ryan Dempster?
Because you asked the question, I'm going to say Hill. Also bearing in mind that Hill was 2 years away from kind of emerging in 07.
But. So Ryan Dempster had 33 saves in 2005.
So, so it's a trick question.
Nope. He made 6 starts for some reason. And Rich Hill made 4.
Oh.
So Ryan Dempster more starts. He led the team in saves. The only guy to have more than 4 saves, but he also made 6 starts.
So that was a good question that I hadn't really considered that. Dempster started as a reliever. And let's just say for the hell of it that Dempster is very lucky that that wheel didn't fall in 2004, because we'll get
or,
to that.
Or 8.
Right. But it almost fell on 4. It barely clicked over.
It looked like we were heading to 04, which is, while one of my least favorite Cubs seasons, honestly, I think there's somebody could do a 4-hour podcast on 2004.
And we might when we get to it. I think it might, we always provide some backstory anyway. There's always context. And we should probably just start with that because honestly, we talked about the 2009 season already. Kids, go back and listen to it. Very much of a parallel season. We mentioned that when we discussed 2009, it was the sort of fall after the sort of highs. Not that 2004 of a high, it was quite a crash, but it was this team that was legitimately good suddenly and crashed, and then still was good enough to, in spite of the attitudes and because of the attitudes, but in spite of their they were still close to a 500. They were not a 500 team in 2005, so we'll at least even out that ratio. One of the things I remember down the stretch was they were out of it, and we were still angry from how 2004 ended. It was a bunch of malcontents, overly talented team, one of the greatest teams on paper that in the pre-Theo era that we've seen, and flamed out. A lot of those guys came back, in 2005. And they kind of competed in spite of themselves, like I said. But I remember in September when they were faded out, and then Dusty was very much trying to make sure they finished 500. I just remember going, fuck you. No, I don't lie. It would have been the first Cubs team since the DeRocher era. They'd already been the first Cubs team to have consecutive 500 seasons in our lifetime.
Yep.
And they were making a run for 3, which, as you pointed out earlier, was really about Dusty keeping his personal streak of, I think he had 9 extending back to when he was the.
Yeah, he basically kept saying stuff like, my teams don't finish below 500, despite the fact that his 96 Giants went 68-94.
Yep.
The 95 and 94 Giants were also under 500, but from 97 through 2004. His teams averaged close to 90 wins, maybe even more than 90 wins.
It was a good run. I'll give him that.
So for ridiculous reasons, he was pushing them to get to 80, at least 81 wins. It's like, and this shit doesn't matter. Right.
And this is to a fan base that was now 22 months removed from having their heart ripped out, 5 outs from the World Series, and everything going sideways from that point. Couldn't get out of their way in 04 in spite of all the talent, and end up, bickering with announcers and Dusty's not going anywhere. We're going to bounce back. And I couldn't tell you what kind of a start they got off to in 05, I know that they were not in contention in September. I'm pretty confident. I know they opened up in Arizona and hit the shit out of the ball, but Zambrano, did his damnedest to give it back.
Was that the goggles game? Do you remember he got – it was – he had 2 terrible opening day starts. He gets taken out of the game Well, two, like, just where he two? Gave up, like, nine runs or whatever.
Two in back-to-back years. Yeah,
he gets taken out of the game, 11. And he's yelling at the ump, and he does the thing where he makes, like, the, well, now it would get kicked out of Wrigley Field. He makes, like, the okay signs, but he turns them upside down and holds them over his eyes like they're goggles to show that the ump, he needed glasses and got thrown out after he had already been taken out of the game. Well, that was good.
I do remember that. I have absolutely no context, though, with which to date that. If you feel it was opening day, I'm positive. Fine.
Oh, I know it was that. Opening day, and I think it was the one in Arizona. I don't think it was the one in Atlanta. Where?
That was 2011, and he just didn't have it anymore then. So there's Arizona, but I also think he got the opening day start in another game. Either it would have been 06 because 04 would have been Wood, I'm guessing, but where he also couldn't make it through the fifth inning. He was just brutal on multiple opening days.
So the 2005 Cubs had winning months in April, May, and June, but barely. One over every month. 12-11, 14-13, 14-13.
It was a slog.
They were below .500 by a game at the All-Star break. And the only really bad month they had was August. They went 10-18. But they were a very mediocre team. And Dusty tried to drag them to the finish line. They were 16-11 in September.
Okay.
But they lost both their games in October. Those were not playoff games. Those were just...
I wouldn't think.
They finished up with a couple of losses to the World Series-bound Astros.
Oh. And the Astros, they would have come out of the Cubs division still, right? Yeah. 2005, Astros didn't leave for 7 years.
In fact, I think... I'm going to have to look here. I think they finished with four games against the Astros, and I honestly think those were important games for the Astros and the Cardinals for playoff seeding.
I'm looking forward to the edification because I feel the first time around I was kind of tuned out, so I don't think I'm going to be much help in how September went.
Let's see what the standings
are. I'm looking at it, too. I feel it's fair game for me to look at the schedule because I know there's some games that we can come across.
It wouldn't have been that. The Cardinals were 98-62. The Astros were 87-73. So the Astros were... I don't think it meant anything because the Astros and the Phillies... Well, no, there's only one wild card back then, right?
Yep.
Until so the Cubs were trying to keep the Astros out of the playoffs because the Astros only finished a game ahead of the Phillies to clinch the wild card. So I remember those games were a big deal for something. And we hated the fucking Astros, and so...
Well, but even worse, knowing what sacrificial lambs the Astros turned out to be in the World Series that year.
I don't know anything about the 2005 World Series. I don't think there was a... There was no World Series in 05, 06. It got canceled there for quite a while.
Well, actually, there's no World Series. You remember 1904... John McGraw refused to play the inferior American League. Might have been other reasons. 1994, and of course 2005. Only three times. Yeah,
that's what I remember.
The World Series been canceled. So, the Astros, the card. It was sad, you know, Andy. I came across DeCipio in 2003. Like a lot of that was kind of your critical wave. The wave of, you know, it took off. It was the perfect timing.
Yeah, that's when my stardom.
Well, and it coincided with like that sort of Web 2.0 where it was just a lot more accessible. And, you know, we kind of formed this community and, you know, and then we're off. And I love the bravado that you had when you were writing about like, you know, get used to this Cardinals kind of shit. 2003, we're going to be here a while. And they got, you know, they got better. And then it was so quickly turned to dust, which is, of course, a story, you know, it's been told multiple times.
I was only like 12 years too early. That's all.
Even in these 32 seasons, that was kind of a trend. But 2003 was really the first. I mean, if you don't count 1989, we're a different sport. You know, a lot of different things going on where it should, you know, felt like the start of something, and it wasn't. All threes did because of the pitching. I think when Theo and Jed and Joe Madden put together the World Series team that we don't talk about here, but we can freely interject because we all know it, that they kind of went counter to how they built this period of Cubs history, which up until then really seemed like the first stab at a sustained run, you know, maybe because again, we might have been too young in the late 80s to recognize that that team was also probably the makings of a good team if things had been managed properly, which they weren't then, and they weren't in 2003, 2004, 2005. But part of the, in their defense, or not, they were, the foundation was really on starting pitching. And I think what you've seen in baseball through the years is that's tenuous. You know, you had the year before 2005, when the Cubs were coming off of a 7-game loss with a trip to the World Series on the line. Sports Illustrated had, was it 2004? Or maybe it wasn't Sports Illustrated, but there was the idea of Maddox and Wood. I think it was 04. It wasn't. It would have been 03. They wouldn't have been hyping them that early.
The 04 Maddox cover was just Pryor and Wood with the baseballs on fire.
That's it. But they also had Zambrano.
Yeah, they had. Well, the Cubs had. They didn't have a poster, but there's a famous picture of the five aces
when Maddox joined them, yes, to replace the great Sean Estes. So, and Clement was very. But it really wasn't about Clement and Maddox so much as Wood, Pryor, and Zambrano. Mm-hmm. All three of those guys. And Zambrano, obviously, ironically, turned out to have the greatest career of them all. And it was a very good career, although even Zambrano's kind of felt a little bit disappointing. But it was still a better career. But the point is, all three of those guys, we thought,
yeah, it's, you know. The Zambrano thing is funny because he really had a really nice big league career.
He did.
And he was really good in some really big spots. He was too young for the moment in 03 when he pitched. You know, they lost game one because he couldn't hold a huge lead against the Marlins.
Yep. Just like on opening day.
But he did a lot of cool stuff. And then Carlos's whole myth about him was, he was this incredible athlete, a switch hitting pitcher with power from both sides. He was a really good fielder. He would have these stretches where he was almost unhittable, but he was also nuts. And he was nuts in the mostly, almost always the good way. Like it was, even when, he would lose his temper and it would be detrimental, but it would be entertaining. Like he would, throw the ball from home plate into the stands while he was arguing with an ump, and then throw the ump out of the game after the ump threw him out.
That's another one.
And he punched Michael Barrett in the face. Like, which one of us didn't want to do that? And
that wasn't a bad thing either. No. Ordinarily, that might be, but that's in the plus column.
And remember when the Cubs put the Cubs? We talk about how they'll do anything for a sponsorship now. Well, this is not new for the Cubs. Remember one year they had Motorola phones in the dugout, and when Lou was the manager, and the things didn't work, and he was he'd show him throwing the phone and having to signal down to the bullpen with a towel who to warm up. But more famously, one year Gatorade decided to put a machine in the dugout. Not a Gatorade jug, an actual like when you go to Taco Bell and they give you a cup and you go over and pick your own fountain drink. And of course, the guy who destroyed the Gatorade machine with a bat during a game was Carlos.
Wow.
Yes. It was great.
No pitcher in the last 50 years has hit as many home runs as Carlos Zambrano with 24. He's actually tied with Bob Gibson, but Gibson had some of those in a period that extends beyond 50 years.
So I'm an unabashed Shohei Ohtani fan.
How the fuck could you not be? Way to go out on a limb.
But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Carlos Zambrano was Shohei 15 years ahead of his time. And the Cubs should have just unleashed him full fury and allowed him to play in the outfield when he wasn't pitching, because he could hit better than most of those guys. We could have had Shohei 1.0.
Carlos was called up, we could look this up, but I want to say he was called up pretty young in 2001, which is a season that we mentioned and a season in which we recollected Zambrano. He came up for one start in early September, and I can't imagine he was more than 20. He was a little bit younger than even Wood and Pryor, 20, 21. I like your thinking, because I'm thinking at that age, they could have sent him out in Mesa with Jimmy Pearsall to learn how to be an outfielder.
Would you have rather had Carlos in center field or Corey Patterson?
Well, in retrospect,
I don't think there's even a choice to be made there. Yeah, Carlos was 20 when he came up in 2001, which was way too early. Well, I shouldn't say way too early. It was too early because by 2002, he made 16 starts and 16 relief appearances and had a 3.66 ERA.
And we talked about this. That was all down the stretch. So what in the Carlos Zambrano trajectory, came up for a spot start young, but for a good team. So they needed him. And he was young. In 02, They had high hopes. He was slated to make the team, and he melted down in his last couple spring training starts, got cut. Cubs ended up having a terrible season. Baylor got fired, and they limp along. But now there's no pressure. Zambrano comes back up, and he just ran off the numbers, effective. And then a year later, he's pitching, in the playoffs.
So if we want to compare this to a current Cub, I know this because I just made the comparison. I was trying to think of who the great Matt Duffy reminded me of. I said he's Vance Law. And the numbers are pretty close.
Not bad. Not bad. I listened to that. I heard that.
Carlos Zambrano, a higher career slugging average than either Matt Duffy or Vance Law.
Is that Vance Law, too?
Yep.
What was his career slugging?
Carlos, .388. I believe that Duffy is .380. And Vance is like .376.
Wow.
Vance's last 2 years in the big leagues didn't do his career stats much good.
Certainly the power.
And he took a whole year off. I didn't even realize that. He didn't play in 90. And then he came back in 91 for the A's and played like 75 games. It was bad.
On an A's team that was in contention.
Yeah, so for his career, Carlos, 24 homers. So he had... Carlos basically had a year's worth of a position player's full season worth of at-bats. A little more than typical. 693 at-bats for his career.
Well, Willie Wilson, if he batted leadoff for a team that batted low. Willie Wilson, I thought, had 700 plate appearances 1 year.
He hit .238, an on-base of .248, .388 slugging. He hit 24 homers and 71 RBIs.
I'd like to see that comparison
around here. This is the best here. For his career, he struck out 240 times. How many times do you think he walked?
11?
10. 24-1 strikeout to walk. That basically is Corey Patterson. So you could have played him.
Right. The lawnmower is hacking. Although I would say he has more power than Patterson. I can't imagine Patterson's 162 game or a 698 plate appearance season would yield that many home. Maybe it would. I don't know. I'm thinking maybe Rob Deer, but Rob Deer would probably have like 33 homers.
I would guess Corey's slugging is going to be higher. Corey really.
That's true. He had legs too, so he probably got doubles.
He was a flawed prospect, no doubt, but the Cubs fucked him up.
100%. I don't know how much we've talked about it yet. I don't know if we want to now. He was not on the 2005 Cubs. I think we'll get a chance because Patterson's years with the Cubs, we haven't really covered.
I'm going to give Corey credit. Corey had a higher batting average, a higher on-base percentage, and a higher slugging percentage than Carlos, but not by much. .252, .290, .400.
Wow.
They were basically the same hitter. And one of them could throw a fastball 97 miles an hour, and the other one
Corey was an above-average outfielder, but...
Yeah, but he had no business. They brought him up for a cameo when he was 20. But by 2001, they were like, all right, go get him, kid. And Corey had struggled. He was really good in classic. And he was on a typical prospect trajectory. Mm-hmm. He was actually a little, maybe even a little bit young for the Midwest League, and he dominated the way you're supposed to.
He batted 361 or something crazy, and then he went to the Arizona Fall League where he was the youngest player in the league, and I want to say he may be like MVP or he tore it up.
So then the Cubs were like, he's perfect. We're just gonna rocket him through the system, and his stats never warranted it.
And then he continued to tear it up in the Major League camp. That was the thing that really
everybody tears it up in. Peterson hit .580.
Peterson had proven himself, but then what happened was, Patterson had a step back and they didn't change their course, and that's where they started to funk him. I agree. We'll talk about it more in other years, but because we both have thoughts.
He's on this team.
On Patterson. He was?
Yeah.
He got traded to Baltimore for Jerry Hairston, or is that Sammy?
That's Sammy Sosa got traded to Baltimore.
But
for
Patterson was dealt to Baltimore, too. All right. But by now, they've given up. Did he get a lot of
that? This was his last season with the Cubs.
Was he a regular outfielder? Had he lost his job, or was he playing every day in 05?
He played 126 games. He had 451 at-bats. So he played most of the time. He had
he was the regular.
He had a great lineup. .215, .254, .348. Struck out 118 times at 451 at-bats.
So just to summarize then the careers, you're right. That trajectory got off to the right start. He was flawed. They did not help things. This was still like Ed Lynch getting desperate that, oh, my God, I haven't really produced anything in 6 years. I feel like that was part of it. And it kind of retarded his progress. and he was never going to be that good. If he came up in certain other systems, I do believe that in the right channels, he would have actually been an above average player. Yeah. At, you know, at worst.
So 1999, he plays for Lansing. Hits 320, 358 on base, 592 slug. He hits 20 homers in 475 at bats. He steals 25. He steals 33 bases.
And he's 19?
He's 19, which for the Midwest League is young. Like the year I worked in the Midwest League, Prince Fielder was 19 and tore it up. And that was, you knew he was going to be really good. Because
and Prince Fielder had a great career.
Yes. West Tennessee the next year.
He was 61. That's what it was.
And so he should have repeated. Actually, they shouldn't have skipped the Florida State League. They got really aggressive.
And I do remember looking at it recently, like, because I was focused on batting average, which seemed like a huge drop. His on-base and slugging weren't horrible, but it wasn't off the chart. There was no reason to keep him on the fast track because he was so young.
Because then the next year he goes to Iowa, and everybody hits at Iowa.
Well, this is after he's had a cup of coffee, right? He stood no chance of making that 0-1 team.
He'd had two stints in the big leagues. Well, no, you're right. They started Iowa in 0-1, and then they brought him up.
And they brought him up, and he went back. And he, like I mentioned this before, in one game in 0-1, he had a big game-winning homer in, like, the seventh inning in Enron Field off of Roy Oswalt. Like, he showed flashes in 0-1, actually. But he was still extremely young, and I think some of the rare – he had rare successes. Remember, he was batting .303 when he tore his knee in 2003.
That'll be one of the things we talk about in 0-3, because he was – I remember at the time, he was really starting to struggle. And him tearing up his knee when he tore it up just froze his stats at a good level. It looked like he'd had a really good year. But watching the games, it's like, I don't know.
Yep.
And the Cubs basically, well, and then we can talk about this in 03 too. Kenny Lofton wanted to come back, kind of, but he didn't like Sammy. And Sammy didn't like him. And the Cubs were like, fuck it, we're going with Corey anyway.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
And they didn't have a leadoff hitter until Dexter.
Right.
They went 12 years without a fucking leadoff hitter because of that.
Is that a fact, actually? I'm going to take your word for it. You're probably right.
Kenny had interest, and the Cubs were like, eh. And then he was like, eh. And then he moved on.
Which, you know, we'll talk about Sammy.
Their whole thing was that, well, we're not going to be able to get him a full. And I remember at the time thinking, all right, between the games you're going to want to sit Corey, because Corey was coming off a serious knee injury. He figured he wasn't going to play every day anyway. Plus, there's some guys you want to shield him from. And the fact that Moises was always hurt. There are going to be plenty of at-bats for another outfield.
That's true. It's true.
And they didn't do it.
I didn't know about Sammy not liking Lofton.
I think it was mostly Kenny thinking Sammy was a prick.
Right, and a little bit of a showboat.
A lot of people thought Kenny was a prick, too. So.
Yeah, but if you really want to win, you're going to put up with that, because Lofton was a fucking he was a gamer, man.
Yeah, he had that kind of Reggie Sanders part of his career where he was good on every team he played on, but he would only be on the team for a year. And the next year, Reggie was always getting – every team always thought they could just replace him. Like, you know what, he's okay, but we could do better. And then they'd have a different right fielder who wasn't as good. And with Kenny, I think some of it was personality-driven, too, where they're like, yeah, he's a little much.
Yeah.
But he's also your center fielder and your leadoff guy, and those guys – some of those guys tend to be that way.
So Kenny turns out to be a rental. Corey claims the job in 04. Now we're drawing closer to the present, but in 04, Corey actually kind of has a nice year. And then when Nomar got acquired, Dusty inexplicably put Patterson to leadoff spot, and it totally worked for like 10 days, which meant that Dusty was never going to back off of it. And Patterson was like on base from hitting the ball, just a hot streak. And long after it was too late, Dusty, you know, Patterson went off a cliff, and he never did much good with the Cubs after that point. So, but if you look it up, in the 10 days after they got Nomar, he was on fire, but he should never have been in the leadoff spot to begin with.
So this is funny. I've got a couple of windows open, and you were talking about 2004. Corey had a pretty good year, and I'm looking at the stat line. I'm like, that wasn't that good. I'm like, bad, but he had a good year the next year. I'm looking at Zambrano's hitting stats. Carlos had some – so in 2005 – he hit 300 with a .463 slugging average in 80 at bats. So all 33 starts. So not insignificant.
Small sample.
No, in 2008, he had an .892 OPS. His OPS plus was 123.
Of course, because OPS.
Four homers, 14 RBIs in 83 at bats.
I love the fucking
28
lawnmower.
Hits.
God bless that bull.
And nine of them were for extra base.
Oh, man. What a joy.
His last year with the Cubs, he hit .318 with a .500 slugging percentage.
He was actually getting better, it sounds like, as his career progressed. Like, he just was, I don't know.
Well, Lou
maybe
was,
not.
Lou was pinch hitting him. And I think Quadi did too in 11. He should have been 11 because he was their best hitter in 2011.
Oh, boy, I can't wait till we do 2011. So really, 2005 is kind of like the apex. I would kind of suggest. No, not really. Zambrano was really good for a while. He's good through 2009.
Yeah, Carlos had a nice career. We remember the crazy shit. Like, remember when he left a game and they were worried that he had torn something in his elbow, and they announced that he had been sent to go get an MRI. And then somebody got news that Carlos didn't show up for the MRI. Because it wasn't an open MRI machine where you just stick your arm in it. It was the one you had to get in it, and he was afraid of those, and so he wouldn't go. He's like, no, I'm not doing it.
That's just great.
There were some beauties on this 05 Cubs. Now, this, of course, was... This was not... Well, this was Neffy saved the season.
Wait, it was, wasn't it?
Because 2004, Neffy came late in the year.
Right, and he was helpful in September.
Yes, but in 2005, because Nomar had left his groin in the batter's box at Busch Stadium, Neffy got to play shortstop the whole season, and he had a really good first half.
Of course he did.
Dusty said he saved the season, which is why... One of my favorite tweets whenever there's kind of a mediocre
it's become a
personnel move is season saved.
It was ridiculous when he said it. We knew
We all knew it was terrible. This was the year that Neffy came up with runners at second and third and two outs and bunted.
that happened too. I'm going to charge you or I'll find it. I'm going to find the game. I need more information. I'd like to find just the details.
Well, there's a great on DiCiprio. I'll link this. There's a great oral history of 2005 Neffy
I remember that. You know, and the thing is, like, even when when Dusty said that, and I don't know what year it would have been. All right, so I just remembered something that I'm going to walk back here because this is what we do. 2005 was the season that the Cubs had had Todd Walker for a couple of years. They brought in Walker in 04 to serve as a left-handed complement to Mark Grudzielanek, okay, coming off the division-winning season in 03. Grudzielanek was gone in 05. Walker comes out. Walker was a nice player. He was a money ball player.
Walker,
he was a left-handed,
and Walker had been really good for the Red Sox in the 03 playoffs. This is a great move.
It was. And I liked Walker. And it was a good complement to Grudzielanek in 04, even though they fell short. It was his job in 05. Now, I'm going to flash back to 2004, American League, White Sox. Carlos Lee's is on. I have to remember the details here, but this is what it leads to. Carlos Lee was like on third base, tried to score on a sac fly in a game against the Twins, and he went in real soft, right? And even Ozzie threw him under the bus. About not being aggressive on the base pass. And the Twins were a hot rival, the White Sox, and this, that, and the other thing. And the Sox ended up trading Carlos Lee to the Brewers in the end of the 2005 season. They would have gotten would have been some of these assholes that helped them win a series, Scotty Pods and shit like that. Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's aggravation number one. This trade, because, you know, Carlos Lee is perceived to be, you know, a loafer, runs them out of town, and they get some of these weird, odd pieces that help them supposedly win a World Series. Well, at the same time, but 6 months before the Sox actually win the alleged World Series, in an April series at Wrigley Field on a Sunday against the Brewers, Carlos Lee was on first, and almost hearing Ozzie Guillen's voice in his head. What? I don't fucking hustle? He went into second base, and he took Todd Walker out. There you have it. So, Todd Walker is out for 6 weeks, whatever, and enter Neffy Perez, who in the short term seems like, whoa, that's a blessing, because Neffy, as Dusty would famously see later, saved the season.
Well, and we had a soft spot in our heart for Neffy Perez.
Sure.
Neffy had hit one of the biggest home runs in Cubs history. He just happened to hit it for the Rockies in a game where in the final day of the 1998 season, the Cubs had that ridiculous last week where Brant Brown dropped the fly ball in Milwaukee, and then Brant got attacked by the bird at the Astrodome. And the Cubs managed to win one of the three games in Houston, which was about as much as we thought they could.
They lost six out of their last eight for the season. And
Terry Mulholland and Rod Beck were both pitching like six innings a game.
it was glorious. I can't wait to the 98. They might be as much fun as 89 for different reasons. But
the Cubs lose on the last day in Houston, and they need the Giants to lose or their season's over. And they walk into the clubhouse and look up, and the San Francisco Colorado game is on, and Nefi Perez hits a walk-off homer for the Rockies, which forces game 163
off of Rob Nen, I should say, who was one of the premier closers at the time.
Yeah, two B's.
Two B's, even though he spelled his name with two B's at the end.
Somebody was just talking about how they were mad at Rob because of the superfluous extra B. He is not tied with Ron Say for it's second, right?
Oh,
because for a second shortest name, because Ed Ott is first, with only five letters in his name.
He is still in the sort of nomenclature Hall of Fame with our good friend Dave Otto, who any chance I have to mention Elk Grove Village legend Dave Otto, I will. And it's just a random fact that I remember reading sometime around 1993-94 where Nen and Otto had pitched, and it was the first time that two pitchers with palindromic names had pitched in the same game. So there you go. Neither of those players have anything to do with the 2005 Cubs.
Okay, so I was a little charitable to Nefi when I said that he had a good first half for the 2005 Cubs. What he had was he had an incredible first month.
So yeah, first 30 games.
After Nomar gets hurt, he takes over as shortstop. And this is what he did in April of 2005. He hit .368. With a .403 on base and a .559 slugging.
Almost had 1,000 OPS.
Yeah, .962 OPS. He hit 3 homers and 12 RBIs in April. And we're like, all right, Nomar who? Fuck him.
That's right.
He was a little worse in May, .259, .283, .370. And then June, .229, .248, .312. And then July, .233, .235, .330. But then Nefi can smell a pennant race. August. .347, .388, .480.
So can you help me clarify? Did Dusty mention this at the end of the season or after that April stretch?
It was during the first half. But the ridiculous part of it was after Nefi clearly wasn't playing well.
For like 2 months.
His stats still look good because of the great April. But those of us who watched every day are like, well, regression mean is a bitch. Nefi is not good anymore, and Dusty is still batting him first or second all the time because he's hitting 300. It's like, well, yeah, because he hit .368 in April.
Right.
His BABIP for April was .379. It was unsustainable. It went to .265, then .240, then .240. Let's see where he hit. Yeah, so here's Nefi Perez, who's this career mediocrity, and he led off in 26 games, and he batted second in 65 more. That's way too fucking much for him. And his on-base average when he led off was .263, and his on-base average when he hit second was .300. And Dusty could never quite figure that out. Because Dusty only looked at cumulative stats. It's like, he's hitting .285. It's like, yeah, because he's hit .209 for the last 12 weeks.
He didn't want to work or confront anybody. I don't know why would you not recognize it? You don't want to have to
Dusty was. We joked about this, but this shit was real. And when Dusty makes out a lineup, unless proven otherwise, your center fielder leads off, your second baseman bats second,
right?
But then in lieu of that, then your shortstop has got to bat either first or second, because that's how it worked in the 70s. It's like, that's not how it works anymore. I thought when he went to the Astros, it was perfect because he inherited George Springer and Jose Altuve. So he the center fielder led off and the second baseman batted second. Like, this might work for Dusty because the lineup is automatically tailored to his stupid assumptions.
Wow. Yeah. I when he would say, so I remember like just the dread we would, when he would make that a quote like that at that, because the bloom was off the rose for Dusty by then, and we unfortunately had to endure one entirely full season beyond this.
Yeah.
But when he would say a thing like, and the bottom fell out, that's one of the bottom six seasons ever, but or in this 32-year period, we'll talk about it. But when he made the comment that Nephi saved the season, he just like, it was one of the things that fills you with dread. You're like, you just, like the guy, he doesn't want to get it. Like having Patterson continue to play leadoff through September when it was clear it was not a good idea.
So we go from the absurd to the sublime. Derek Lee. This is even for a franchise with, for as little success as the Cubs had for a long time, one thing they had in abundance,
which we've talked about,
were great individual players. The problem was they could never quite bunch enough of them together to have a
right.
good team.
Well, I thought you were going to say great first baseman, which we've been lucky to have in Lou. But yeah, either one fits.
So, but the thing about it is, for a franchise that's as unsuccessful as they have been for most of their time, if you put out, if you are like one of the Cubs' leaders in certain categories, it really means something. You know, because this is a franchise that had, you know, Ernie Banks and Billy Williams and Hack Wilson. And, I mean, there are a lot of, you know.
It's a 150-year-old franchise that has existed for a long time. Good or bad. Bad stretches. Good. They've had both.
You know, Rogers Hornsby played for the Cubs when he was still pretty good.
Yes, he did. Kyler and Stan Hack. Andy whatever.
Pafko. It's the franchise of Andy Pafko.
They got rid of Andy Pafko. Too soon anyway, but yeah, it's regardless, you play that long, there's, it's a history, good and bad. And so where does he rank historically? What were you,
well, I'm just gonna say, if you look at just his 2005 season, he led the National League in hits with 199, in doubles with 50, in batting average at 335, in slugging percentage 662, OPS 1080, OPS plus 174, total bases 393. He finished, I always thought he finished second to Pujols in the MVP voting. He won the Silver Slugger at first, even though he wasn't the MVP, and he won the Gold Glove, but he finished third in the MVP voting. I got to see who finished.
2005, while you're looking at Jeff Bagwell, was he still, no, he was
so first, it was Albert Pujols won the MVP.
Guerrero?
And second was Andrew Jones.
Okay, I would never have guessed that.
And he shouldn't have, because his numbers were paled in comparison to Lee's.
No way in hell he should have been ahead of Lee. I know he was a great center fielder and was probably, you know.
So Albert had a higher on-base percentage, he had more RBIs, and he scored more runs, but that's it. Lee had more hits, more homers, he had a higher batting average, he obviously won the batting title.
More doubles.
He had a higher, Albert won it because the Cardinals won 98 games and the Cubs won 78.
So was 05 the year Albert hit that like 900-foot homer off of Brad Lidge in the playoffs?
Yes.
Which, in a sort of Mandela effect, a lot of fans are like, oh, that home run ruined Brad Lidge. No. First of all, it wasn't as embarrassing as fucking letting Scotty Pods hit a walk-off all off in the World Series. But Brad Lidge in the World Series. But Brad Lidge came back in 08.
I'm pretty sure Brad got the save the next night.
Yeah.
Or it was two, I think they had a day off, and then they played again. That didn't win, you know, obviously didn't win the series for the Cardinals, because the Cardinals were down to their last out.
That's what it was. So it was dramatic, and it was shocking. And to Pujols,
and it was a fucking bomb.
He hit like the back panel of the outfield wall. It was ridiculous. It should have probably ruined Lidge. Just like who's the guy for? We're gonna jump to the Theo era Cubs. You remember the Cincinnati pitcher Brad Hoover? I feel like Kyle Schwarber just ruined that guy's career in like three different at bats. But it felt like that home run that Pujols hit was the type of homer that would that could have just ruined Lidge, because it was humiliating, it was emasculating, it was a 900-foot homer, and it lost the game for him. But it didn't ruin his career, because like you said, he got a save later. They went to the series. Podsednik also did that to him. That didn't ruin him, because he closed out Philadelphia's series over Joe Maddon's Rays in 08, I'm pretty sure. So, but still funny that it happened.
Lidge didn't get a save the next night, because the Astros won 5-1 in Busch Stadium. But I want to look at the stupid thing. My computer.
While you're
Yeah,
while
so,
you're looking at it, go ahead.
Lidge comes in to pitch the ninth with a 2-run lead. Astros are 4-2. He strikes out John Rodriguez. He strikes out future Cub John Mabry. But then, unfortunately, he has to deal with David Eckstein. He singles to left. Jimmy Edmonds walks. And Pujols, on a 0-1 pitch, hits one 1,000 feet to give the Cardinals the lead. Jason Isringhausen gets the save. I don't know how he did it. He had to get Willie Taveras, Jose Vizcaino, and Chris Burke out.
Well, wait. I didn't hear that you're beginning there, Andy. This was what, game four? This was
potential. This was going to, they were going to close it out. The Astros were going to the World Series.
And it's
they
the bottom of the ninth.
Clinch at home in Enron Field. Yep.
See, that's even worse than I remember. It's actually impressive that Lidge came back from this. He got the first two outs, and then he puts the two on and Pujols homers. Yeah, so it's even more devastating than I remember. But again, it did not ruin Brad Lidge's career. You know whose career was probably kind of ruined in 2005?
Mark Pryor?
Well, that took a little bit longer. Wasn't 2005 the year that Matt Mertens and Adam Greenberg?
Yeah, I was going to get to Moonlight Greenberg.
See, and he ruined it. He does not deserve
dumb shit. Came back for no reason to make an out.
No reason.
I guess it gave him an actual batting average.
No, he blew it. All right, let's quickly do it. So 2005. These are the Cubs prospects that we're dealing with. We're now like 5 years basically into the Jim Henry era. Ed Lynch was canned in 2000. It was really technically Andy McPhail that shepherded them through the rest of the 2000 season and 2001. But Henry was behind the scenes. It was pretty much officially the GM. I think by the time they fired Baylor in 02, I might be wrong. But 03, 04, 05, it's Jim Henry's show. So we get to the 2005 season. Actually, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. how I got rolling into the Henry. I wanted to say something about.
All I remember was the Cubs were, we talked about a month they would finish one game over 500 in this year. They were struggling. Their offense wasn't good, and the farm system was so robust that in order to shake up the lineup on the same day, they called up Matt Mertens and Adam Greenberg and put them immediately in the starting lineup.
And local beat writers were just like tripping over themselves to report on what great friends they were. They're roommates in AAA. They got the news at the same time. This heartwarming story.
And remember, part of this was Peter Gammons fueled, because when the Cubs made the Nomar trade, they got Mertens in the deal, and Gammons was going on about, of course, they got Nomar, you know, this iconic Boston athlete, but the steal of the deal is this smooth-swinging, red-headed outfielder named Matt Mertens. It's a complete steal. How did the Cubs possibly get the Red Sox to throw Matt Mertens in this deal? This is Ryne Sandberg coming over with Larry Boa.
And, of course, we're salivating.
Yeah, we're like, holy shit. And then his minor league numbers, I mean, Mertens could hit. Even in the big leagues, Mertens could hit.
He did. When I think of Matt Mertens as a Cubs, I think of two things. One, he was actually their team leading hitter in 2006. He batted like .302. He qualified too, but that was a miserable season. And then the other thing that I remember, Matt Mertens, he had the ability more than anybody else to just hit the softest balls somehow. It just seemed like he never hit the ball, but he got hits. They dropped in. They found holes.
You know what? It would have helped him out with those softballs. The Lawnmower 4.0 from Manscaped.
Remember 20, kids. Remember 20. Go right now.
Shave your softballs with a Lawnmower 4.0.
Matt Mertens approves.
Now, one of the stats I remember about Matt Mertens, it was a stat that I tracked because I'm an idiot. I believe that it was well into his, actually, I think it may have even been his third year, 2007, before Matt Mertens had finished a day in the big leagues with a career batting average of less than .300.
Impressive.
He hit .321 as a rookie, and the next year he had .297. And I think it was sometime in 2007 when he hit .281 that his career average finally dropped below .300, because he had gotten two hits, I think, in his first game, and he got one in his first at bat. So he literally, his batting average had never dropped below .300 for like 2.5 seasons.
That's a fun fact. What did he finish with?
He is a career .286 hitter.
just kept dropping until he's like, hey, I'm going to Japan. And like, Matt, it doesn't pick back up.
This was Matt Mertens' problem. So his rookie year, 2005. Well,
no power.
He slugs .521.
Power that year.
It's only 140 at bats, but he hits 7 homers, 3 doubles, and 2 triples. And you're like, all right, well, that'll play. .520, that's great. Next year, slugging .444. Not so great. Not terrible, but not great. You're gonna have to get those numbers up.
And I feel like a lot of those had to be doubles. I don't remember too many Matt Mertens home runs, but okay.
22 doubles in 06 with 13 homers. 455 at bats. That's the only like full season he played in the bigs. 07, his slugging goes to .438. In 08, between the Cubs and the A's, his slugging average goes to .229. And then in his final season with the Rockies, even with Coors, .404. And that was it. Now, remember that he did come back. He was a...
Oh, he did, didn't he?
He was a spring training invitee for the 2016 Cubs.
Much like Jamie Moyer was in 1992.
I think he got a ring. They gave everybody a ring. I think he got a ring for being in spring training.
Good for him. He wasn't a horrible player. The slugging was higher than I would have guessed.
The reason I remember that, my first article for The Athletic was a welcome letter to Matt Mertens. Welcome back to Matt Mertens. And it was framed around me introducing him to his new teammates. So it was a way of basically going through the Cubs roster, except I was introducing them. I was telling Matt Mertens about his new teammates. That was the first thing I wrote for The Athletic. Which, just like you guys, if I want to read it, I have to pay for it. That's fine.
That's it. That's fine. So we talked about Matt Mertens. We haven't talked about the other guy in that trade, which we've hinted at. So just anyone, I guess, over the age of, I'm going to guess, 23 would probably remember Adam Greenberg shows up in Miami with his buddy Matt Mertens, and in his very first plate appearance and the very first pitch from Florida reliever and former Brewer from 1998, Valerio de los Santos, and gets hit in the face. It's terrifying. It's scary.
Yeah, and it was every bit as bad as you.
Yeah, it fucked him up.
If you saw Kevin Pillar get hit in the head two nights ago,
yeah, that was pretty bad.
It was the same thing. And then Pillar was great in the press conference the next day. He shows up at a press conference to talk about it. He's like, I feel fine. His nose is like sideways. Both of his eyes are black.
He's like, I'm fine.
I'll be back in 2 weeks.
He's like a boxer.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was sad. It was scary. It was weird. But it also resulted in him having a 1,000 on base percentage, which unique.
Yep.
I mean, go to Baseball Reference, folks. I'm going to do it at some point in this broadcast. I don't want to do it while I talk, but there can't be that many because obviously if you get one crack at getting on base and you get on base, you're going to get another crack and eventually it's going to, John Pachoric is like the only guy I can think of probably. John Pachoric, I think, does have, he has to. John Pachoric, sorry for the detour, folks, 1963. And yes, he is the brother of Tom Pachoric and Jim Pachoric, which is really funny when you consider that John Pachoric played his one game in 1963. Jim was the most well-known throughout his career. He was on the 83 White Sox that won the AL West. He played in the American League from like 1970 to 85. And then like when we were around in college, there was a Jim Pachoric, and he was also their brother. So it doesn't sound like an Irish name, but there certainly must have been a lot of Pachorics to span from 1960 to the mid-80s for guys making their debuts. But just to put a cap on this long-winded story, John Pachoric, I encourage you to look him up on Baseball Reference because if you're a stat geek, you'll enjoy it. Guy played in one game, had 3 hits. He went 3 for 3. I don't know what he did. A couple doubles, and he batted 1,000, got 1,000 on base, somehow didn't make the team the next year, never played again in the majors. He has a legitimate 1,000 on base.
Yeah, John Pachoric was 18 years old playing for the Houston, what were they, the Colt 45s?
Yeah, it would have been the Colt 40. Was it 63?
1963, 3 for 3, 2 walks, 4 runs scored, 3 RBIs.
Wow.
So OPS, OPS plus for his career, .495. Might be the highest ever. So I just looked up Moonlight Graham, and of course we all know Moonlight Graham from Field of Dreams.
He never batted.
Right. He just has zeros. He only played defense, right?
Right. But the reason we call Adam, we used to call Adam Greenberg Moonlight, was because of that, not the 1,000 on base percentage, of the fact that he had this very fleeting moment in the big leagues. It was actually far more dramatic than W.P. Kinsella wrote about with Moonlight Grand, which is a poignant story and a real story about a, you know, the early 20th century ball player that got in one game in the outfield, never batted, yeah. And he's in Baseball Reference. But
well, it's a tragedy. So he's batting, and there's a little girl choking on a hot dog. And he has to come across the foul line, and when he does, he turns back into an... Oh, wait, that was the movie.
Oh, that was
back into he turns back into Burt Lancaster, and he's old.
Oh,
and
right.
He's too old to play anymore. So that's what happened. That's not what happened to the real.
And the movie, well, and the movie Field of Dreams and the book Shoeless Joe really did popularize Moonlight Grant. Like, we wouldn't know who he was without them, but they did, and so we know, and he's part of the baseball lexicon. Very similarly, Adam Greenberg could have been part of that baseball lexicon. The sad part is he could not come back that year. The sadder part was he was not good enough, or I don't think it really had to do with the injury long term. I think it hurt him in the short term. He just wasn't really that good. He had his opportunity, got taken from him. Although we got the 1,000 on base percentage, right. Which I thought, well, that's a feather in your cap, and that's it. And then in a really, I thought, a disgusting move that didn't serve anybody well, the Mets, in a really cynical ploy, tried to exploit this sort of unique quality of, and then he, in an even more baffling decision, I just would have figured he would have been smarter than that. And maybe he had the ego to think, well, now is my chance. But it's like 5 years had passed, and you're like a 4 foot
eight.
I
want to play for Ozzie Guillen.
Is that, wait, it was the mayor. I said Mets. Was it the Marlins? Was it against the Mets? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. And so he basically allowed the bar to be lowered. He did not deserve it. It was very Tebow-esque. They did it as a stunt, and he participated in the stunt, which makes me think lesser of him, because he not only did he pass up an opportunity to be another Moonlight Graham, and I won't call him that anymore, because he ruined his impeccable 1,000 on base percentage by allowing the Mets to pander to him, or the Marlins to pander to him. And, you know, what he went like 0 for 3. They gave him a start, and he like really sucked.
No, just one at bat, he struck out.
Oh, one at bat. All right. So he's got a 500 on base. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, a lot more people have a 500 on base than a 1,000 on base for their careers.
So looking at, based on this purely on his stats, Greenberg was a solid minor leaguer. His stats looked like a guy who would have been an extra outfielder in the big leagues. The year he got called up, 05, him and Merton were playing at West Tennessee. He was hitting .269 with a .386 on base, 4 homers, 33 RBIs, 15 stolen bases. The next year, so that ends the season, getting hit in the face. He goes to Iowa the next year, but he hits .118 in 17 at bats. They sent him down to West Ten. He hits .179. They release him. He gets picked up by the Dodgers. He plays in Jacksonville. Then the next year he's in Wichita. Then in Arkansas. And he still can get on base. .373, .361. But now he's old. He's 27 years old. And he plays in the Atlantic League for 4 years. And then pops back up with the Marlins for 1 year.
Maybe I'm being harsh, because it's obviously...
Well, he was not going to be... It was very unlikely he was going to be... Like a,
I know, but
he wasn't going to be anybody's leadoff hitter, center fielder. But he looks like a guy who would have gotten, you know,
hundreds
of big league at bats.
Right, but what I'm considering in moderating my hot take is that maybe the I don't know, maybe the 97 mile an hour pitch in his face fucked up his vision, and he just, you know, that's why he didn't. It wasn't because he sucked and he got a lucky opportunity. It really did retard his progress.
Because he got vertigo really bad, right?
I don't know.
That's why he couldn't come back that year.
But you said he
kept trying to come back, and then everything would start spinning.
But you said he had a high on base, so I trust he saw the ball.
He called Nick Asaski and be like, "What do I do?" And Nick's like, "Fuck! If I could tell you, I would have kept playing." And so
Nick Asaski, he pretty much, didn't he retire eventually?
Yeah, because he got vertigo.
Well, I know, right? That's canon, right?
Don't think you can play with vertigo. That's
1980s baseball. So 2005 was also the last hurrah for the star-crossed LaTroy Hawkins. Do you remember who the Cubs got for LaTroy Hawkins?
Well, they got two guys. They got Jerome Williams. Did they also get – is that the Boof Bonzer?
No. Cubs don't have Boof Bonzer.
Oh, I just like to say Boof.
Right. Well, instead of talking about Boof, let's talk about David Aardsma.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
Back in the peak of the message board days, our good friend Slacky, Andrew C. Slack, who was quite a prolific coiner of nicknames or descriptions, made the suggestion in the message board that an Ardsma sounds like something, sounds like a maneuver that involves you trying to shave your balls with a dry, rusty razor. Well, guess what, kids? We've got good news for you. Because it's 2021 and you don't need to do an Ardsma anymore. And you don't need to take any ill-conceived antiquated farm implements to your private parts when you have the lawnmower 4.0.
Right. It's not the Ardsmower 4.0. It's the lawnmower 4.0. And it's much safer. Yeah, I remember having actual hopes for Jerome Williams. He, you know, he's from Hawaii. He pitched with the Puka shells.
We forgot to remember one more reference to remember 20 since I brought it up. But there
you go. That's right.
Yeah. He had the puka shell
and free worldwide shipping.
That's right. He had the puka shells and he kind of reminded me, he was like a latter day Brian Williams. Remember the Brian Williams who was with the Cubs in 2000, kind of a hefty African American Cubs pitcher. I feel like Jerome Williams was on the Brian Williams path, but he was a very good prospect for the Giants. So was Ardsma. It was actually kind of a win-win because Hawkins was still effective, but it was not a good fit for him with the Cubs.
Well,
he had to go.
Yeah, and so early on with LaTroy, and we get into this in 03 too, when used as a setup man in 03, LaTroy was really good. Or 04.
Terrific.
In 04.
04, 04.
He was really good. And then through a confluence of events, Sweaty Joe Borowski falling apart and
–
He made him the closer, and he could not – he was not nearly as – I shouldn't say couldn't do that. He was not as good as a closer. And LaTroy was also probably not super well cut out, even though he's from Gary, to pitching in a big market. He took everything personally. He got really pissed. He had the infamous thing in 04 where he yelled at Bruce Levine and said, "The difference between you and me is that I can do your job, but you can't do mine." Which, honestly, is true. Especially this shit that Bruce tweets now, I guarantee LaTroy would do that.
How consistently can LaTroy be so precise with the one space after the last word but before the period?
Yeah. Everybody's got to have a thing.
So I felt bad for LaTroy. I hated him at times, like a lot of Cubs fans, but I also feel he was put in a tough spot. Brian Dempster did not help him in 04. Mm-hmm. We'll go into that when we talk about 04. Cubs finally cut bait with him early in 05. And this kind of brings me to one more thing that we would be remiss if we didn't mention this that happened in 05, but that the Giants came back to town. And we can probably look this up on the schedule, but it was a weeknight series in the summer. And, you know, the Giants back around then would only be coming to town once. And I remember it was like one of those things that just it made you like annoyed that you're following this team that was kind of good because they're always getting wrapped up in stupid shit. And I just kind of remember it was around the time that Greg Maddux would have gotten his 3,000th strikeout at Wrigley Field. But it somehow got, because, you know, Dusty was kind of aggrieved because LaTroy Hawkins had made his comeback. He was first time back. And the fans, of course, were not very kind to him. And I just remember just like a lot of the distractions and the grandstanding and just like, it was like, God, 2 years ago, we were so close to the World Series. And now there's this team that's like pretty talented, but underachieving and easily distracted like a moth to a light. Yeah. And just like jumping on every sort of piece of bait. And it was just so unenjoyable. And they didn't finish 500, but it just like so many points in that season. It was just like, and I didn't want to be ungrateful. They had almost gone to the World Series, but it was like, man, why does it like take so much effort to really try to like this team? But yeah, I brought that up more because not so much about Hawkins, but it is a point that Greggy did come back and get his three, just like Fergie Jenkins in 1982 came back and got his 3,000th strikeout when he struck out Gary Templeton.
Right. So yeah, they came back on July. So he gets traded on early. He gets traded on May 27th, which is, you don't make trades in May very often, but the Cubs were like, all right, LaTroy's got to go. He comes back with the Giants in just lost it here. Comes back from July. The Cubs play the Giants the 25th, 26th, and 27th of July. One of those nights, after a long rain delay, was the night that Greg got his 3,000th strikeout. It was Omar Vizquel.
That's right. It was after a rain delay. Good call. Good. And Omar Vizquel. Okay.
I remember Greg Maddux things. LaTroy pitched in all three games.
And they were high wire acts.
Yeah, like he blew the save, ironically, in the one game that the Giants won.
Wow.
And he got a hold in their 3-2 loss on the 25th. And he blew the save on a 3-2 win.
I'm looking
the next day. And then they were all one-run games. And then he pitched. He didn't get an out in the third game. He pitched a one batter and gave up a hit.
It's funny also that the winning pitcher in both Cubs games was reliever Ryan Dempster, whose inability to throw a strike just 10 months earlier really greased the skids for LaTroy.
He was just taunting LaTroy. Remember me?
Right.
I'm the reason you had to leave town.
All I had to do is throw the goddamn ball over the plate to two banjo hitters that were out of the league within 15 months. But no, I had to put you on the line for a fan base that already hated you. And they're never going to hate me because I'm going to do this again in 2008. And they're still not going to hate me. I'm going to be able to walk into the studios and elbow out the fantastic Jim Deshays and just fucking do whatever I want because I'm Ryan Dempster.
Yep.
So
the fun thing about especially this era of Cubs is it's just looking through the rosters and you immediately remember things. So do you remember, this is 2005, do you remember the Jody Garrett era?
I do. That came right on the heels of the Jerry Hairston era. They played high school together or something, right?
So
I do remember. Or Matt Lawton, too. There was some sort of a rendezvous.
So the Cubs traded for Jody Garrett, and he brought his enormous knee brace with him from Naperville. And he had been
Hairston was from Naperville. Jody Garrett was actually from Villa Park. He went at Willowbrook High School in Illinois, just to set the record straight.
And Jody had been a real prospect for the Indians, but he had torn up his knee, and the Cubs traded for him in need of outfield help. And he lasted 11 games with the Cubs. He did get
just
a hit.
11?
He didn't do a Martin Maldonado. He actually got a hit, and then he was traded. Let's see. So they got him from the Indians. Didn't they also get Lawton from the Indians? Or no,
Lawton
I know what the Lawton thing is. All right, so
Lawton was the one big deadline deal.
Yeah.
Did Lawton get suspended?
Oh, this
or something?
Is good. Okay, so on the 18th of July, they trade with the Indians. You were talking about the weird way that the Cubs were built in the Hendry years. And one of the things, I guess this guy doesn't qualify, but one of the things they did was they kept using first-round picks on guys who went to Jim Hendry's high school, which is not really a great way to build a roster.
Not much better than Ed Lynch's having been familiar with your former major league playing father.
Yes, that's right. Okay, that doesn't have anything to do with this, though. So the Cubs make a trade on the 18th of July with the Indians. They trade, it's a one-for-one, it's a star-for-star deal. It's Jason Dubois for Jody Garrett. Jody lasts 11 games. He is then traded to the Pirates for Matt Lawton at the deadline. This is such a huge season-changing trade for the Cubs. Do you remember what happened to Matt Lawton?
Did he get suspended for steroids or something or no?
But first, the same year, so the Cubs trade for him on the 31st of July. On the 27th of August, they trade him to the Yankees for Justin Berg. And then playing for the Yankees in a playoff push, he got suspended for using steroids.
Wow.
So a whirlwind thing. But these 2005 Cubs had some real gems on it. Under the Dusty era especially, he collected these weird little utility infielders. And the 05 Cubs had some of our least favorites. Yes, the Gremlin, Jose Macias. One of the creepiest looking little guys ever, who's probably most famous for, he was with Sammy Sosa when Sammy lost, what was it, like $30,000?
No,
that was wrapped in a towel.
That was Manny Alexander.
That was Manny Alexander. Sorry, you're right. I'm getting my guys confused.
Jose Macias was the guy that hit the pop-up in Puerto Rico that the Cubs were not able to grab.
That's right.
In 2004, the year before.
Yeah, for the Expos. That was why Hendry traded for him, because of the well-placed
lead-changing walk-off loss.
He's like, "That's this guy has the best place pop-ups. He's going to really help out." do you remember the Enrique Wilson era with the Cubs?
He was a Yankee too at some point.
That's, yes, and he looked like a frog.
He had glasses. Did he wear glasses?
He did not.
I thought he did.
He was fat. Is what he was. He was towards the end of Enrique's career, and he wasn't doing setups anymore. He was just. Do you remember spring training star Scott McLean?
Sort of.
And do you remember what his nickname was? And this is not a nickname we gave him because it's way too lame for us. Oh, but if your name was McLean and you were seeming like some kind of a tough guy, what would your nickname be?
Well, John, obviously.
With Die Hard. They called him Die Hard.
Yeah. They'll call him Die
Hard. For John McLean. Right. Yes.
Can't just call him John.
This would have been the debut seasons for the Cajun Connection. Ryan Terrio and Mike Fondo, they both made cameos late in the season.
Both of them, huh?
Yes.
I was at the game.
It was a freaking matched set.
I feel like I was at the game when Fontano made his debut, and I just remember sitting in seats that were by the left field foul pole, and like I can't see the hitter. I just feel like I'd never seen a smaller hitter in the batter's box. Anyway.
This was one of the more productive Hank White seasons.
Woohoo! Viva!
Henry Blanco hit 242 with 287 on base and a 391, six homers, 25 RBIs.
Attaboy, Hank. That was his second season, I believe.
I believe it was the year he switched numbers, which helped him out immensely.
Did Gabor leave after 03? Damian Miller leave after 03? Yeah, because they brought in Barrett. And then they sort of tethered Blanco to him in 05, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, they brought Barrett in, an infielder who they were teaching how to catch. And then they said, all right, we're going to need a real catcher behind him. So,
well, I remember being angry that the Cubs didn't try harder to get A.J. Pierzynski, who was a disaster in his 1 year in San Francisco, not getting along with Jason Schmidt and whatnot. And
So the famous story about Pierzynski with the Giants was, what was their trainer's name? He came to the Cubs then.
Tony Garofalo.
But anyway, so AJ, who is just one of the biggest assholes in the history of assholes.
Sandy Crum.
He just is. No, not Sandy Crum. It was something Anderson.
So, all right.
He was one of the. He was slightly implicated in the Belco stuff. He takes a foul tip. Basically, it was one of those where he takes a foul ball. Basically one where you would immediately then tweet ball three on Pierzynski. He took it right to the nads. So he's trying to catch his – maybe it was Dave Greshner. Might have been Dave Greshner. He's trying to catch his breath. Trainer comes out to take a look at him. AJ's looking at him like, I got hit in the fucking balls. What are you going to do for me? And the guy goes, well, how does it feel? And AJ, the urban legend is AJ put his hands on the trainer's shoulders and kneed him as hard as he could in the balls and said, that's what it feels like.
Was he batting or catching?
He was catching.
So he had shin guards on top of it. Not that it was mad.
That was pretty much the end. And, this brings it all back because Boof Bonser was in the trade from the Twins for A.J. Pierzynski.
And Joe Nathan, who was a future Cub.
And Francisco Liriano. It was a terrible trade. Yes, it was a great trade for the Twins.
Bonser was like the only kind of a buster. He was probably the hottest prospect, too, at the time. Nathan was incredible.
Yeah, Nathan was a borderline Hall of Fame closer, and Liriano was an amazing starter for the Twins.
And Bonser may well have been good for a couple of years, but yeah.
That was a terrible – because the Cubs tried to trade for AJ that year.
Well, I remember being annoyed.
The Giants' offer was way too good for the Twins to turn down.
Yeah, you can't fault the Giants for not giving him to the Cubs. I just remember
– given how much Henry loved Pierzynski, it was weird – that when the Giants basically said, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
That the Cubs didn't go more aggressively after. And it's because he had fallen in love with Michael Barrett. Which is also ironic considering the two most famous Michael Barrett moments are him getting punched in the face by Carlos Zambrano and him punching A.J. Pierzynski in the face.
Oh, wow. Right. And to his credit, he did hit that. It didn't happen in 05. It happened early in 06. The lead-changing grand slam off of Jason Isringhausen. In April on a Sunday night.
He also had a big game-winning double against the A's.
I was at that game. It was so exciting. It was actually maybe at a triple, but Todd Walker scored all the way from first, came across the plate, which was the most exciting game-ending walk-off slide at home until, like many things, was surpassed by the modern era Cubs when Javi Baez did that against Toronto on Alex Avila's hit.
Okay, so 2005 was actually Hank White's first season with the Cubs.
Yep.
In 2006, I think that was the year he changed numbers from 9, because the curse of the Cubs 9 had started with Todd Hundley, and Paul Bacco had it, and then Hank had it, and you had to get rid of it, and he switched to 24. So he hit better in 06. I think that might have been the year that he got his career batting average up over 220. That was a struggle. He struggled in 07, but in 08, Hank White, 292 for the season for the Cubs.
Wow.
Yes. And now he lives on. It's funny, they're going through all these, the former Cubs returning with the Nationals. And they're making a big deal out of Kyle Schwarber and John Lester. I don't know if either one of those guys ever did. Those two.
Castro.
And then Starlin, one of my all-time favorites. Yeah,
absolutely.
And then they talk a little bit about Dave Martinez, but what about Henry Blanco? I mean, should we celebrate Hank? How is there not a tribute video to Hank every time the Nats come to town?
He got a ring as a coach. He did his part to try to keep things going on a downward ship earlier. But he was on the 08 Cubs, so he actually enjoyed when it cycled back to Pinella. He was still there, so good for Hank.
So the next time, and it's all we have to cling to these days, the next time you watch the World Series video,
which I have on DVD,
and you watch the celebration in the clubhouse, Hank, really good at getting in front of the camera. He is in most of the celebration shots in the clubhouse. He clearly could see the Fox guys and was scooting in front of them so that he would be in all the shots. It was very savvy.
Nice. Viva Hank White.
So one of the great Cubs of all time. Why they haven't retired both of his numbers, I don't understand.
Right. The one last thing I want to just mention real quick, I've talked in the first five episodes about the historic, placing the season in which we discuss in a historical context. I only bring this up because John Dooley brought up a point. John's pretty astute. He's been paying attention for about as long as we have. And I break it down as simply as I can into these eras that we're going to cover in these 32 years. There's a 2-year Wrigley ownership era, which is its own thing. And then this, this almost 20-year Tribune ownership, because they had two different epochs, I break down into Tribune 1, Tribune 2, and then we get into the Ricketts. But Tribune 2, I always would come back and refer to it as this mediocrity by design, and then when Jim Frey overspent, and they realize that that's dumb because people are going to show up. You can't suck if you can help it, but you don't want to just get too risky, and that carried on from 92. I put it until they sold to Sam Zell after the 09 season. So John Dooley does point out, and I'm playing around with this, I still think my thing fits, but it was a little bit of an anomaly that when the Cubs in 03 came out of nowhere, even though they only had 88 wins or whatever, and came that close to the World Series, that it was a little bit different. They did trade for Nomar the next year. They did sign Maddox. There was a little bit of a respite within this so-called mediocrity by design when they had a good team. They traded Aesop for Derek Lee. So I will allow that there's a little bit of a hiccup where it wasn't always like the blueprint. They actually, I think, for 1 year, they did let Jim Hendry sort of act like a real general manager of a big market team. But by the time we get to 05, then we start seeing again, like in 1992. No.
Yeah, well, that shit didn't work last year. So we're pulling tightening your core strength.
Right. But then when the bottom fell out in 06 is when Tribune just sold, and then Sam Zell did sort of come back, with McDonough and signing Soriano.
The Ricketts took control in late 2009, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yep. So I have there is a Tribune 3 era that only lasts for the duration of the Sam Zell ownership, which is basically 2007, 2008, and 2009. And so in those years, standalone, where they weren't really trying because they wanted to build a franchise. Sam Zell was trying to sort of build up the value.
Right.
Of
he thought franchise. That they would the selling price would go up. The Cubs were one of the few assets within that he got with the Tribune that he could somehow appreciate before he could sell it. And so that's why he was willing to let them to have John McDonough go out and sign Alfonso Soriano unbeknownst to Jim Hendry.
Well, it was a sign that Hendry was maybe free to do that. I maybe didn't trust Henry's evaluation skills, but things were different.
Well, you make a good point about them, adding to the payroll. I guarantee the visual in 2003 that I think convinced the Tribune it was worth pouring some money into the team was during those playoff games, all the people that would be out on the street behind on Sheffield and Waveland, I don't know how many people you can fit. I would say thousands,
crazy.
But I don't know. And they're looking at it like, if we can drag this team to a World Series, we could print fucking money. And so for a year, they were like, just go. Just do it. Try it. Go,
yeah,
go, go.
Yeah. For
and
a year.
Everything fell apart in 04.
Although, even, but I will say that even then.
Because they were really good. Well, the 04 one is going to be That team was right. really good.
I know, and I mentioned earlier in this one, it was one of the best teams on paper that we'll see. Even it almost could compete with the Theo era Cubs.
Yeah.
But even then, though, they only really signed Maddux. Lee was one of those.
Well, they got Derek Lee.
But that was a trade that was over-leveraged, right? They're under, kind of like the trades down the stretch in 03 when they got Lofton and Ramirez and Randall Simon and, you know. So, but, yeah, it was a little bit different for a brief period. They weren't just signing up for trying to strike that mediocre balance. They went for it. They did in 04, and then it blew up because it, you know. Just and then in 05, kind of like in 09, it was like the aftermath. It's like, okay, well, a lot of the pieces are here. These are some good players. You're not going to be shitty. So, the results were similar to the mediocrity by design. And at some point, it didn't matter because they trickled into the Zell ownership. But, you know, I only mentioned Jeremy Burnett in the beginning. And, yeah, he was our right fielder. So.
Yeah, that was
– yay.
He had quite a
And the only reason I remember the fat guy, Bill Holman, walking from Arizona to San Diego, it was on a Friday. And I remember listening to it. And I was just like, all right, let's get the game on. And it was a game in which Burnett's got picked. It was against the Nationals. So it was like May. It was like May of but Burnett's late in the game. They're down a run. He got picked off at third base. And I think I was done with Jeremy Burnett.
In 2001, one of my friends and I had limited season tickets to the first 2 years at Miller Park. Because it was easy to get up there, and we picked as many Cub games as we could. So there's two things. We were in the Loge bleachers in right field. Those are actually really good seats. They were $10. $10 for the seats,
wow.
$10 to and $20 to park. So it cost $20 for each of us to go to every game. It was to all the games we went to. So Burnett's was the right fielder. And the things I remember about it were, number one, he always stood in the same spot in the outfield to the point where he literally wore a dead spot in the grass. Because he always stood in the same spot, roughly. He's a good defensive outfielder at the time. But also, the way that the Brewers did it, because their dugout was on the first base side. When the outfielders were warming up, the left fielder and center fielder would play catch, and one of this thing called the super team. They were like the they look like, I'm just saying this girl, because the way she could throw clearly was I think she was a college softball player. She would come out and warm up Burnett's between innings. And he would throw the ball at her as hard as he could. And she never even flinched. She could handle it no problem. And he clearly loved playing catch with her because he could do
that's
that.
Great. That's great.
And she whipped it right back at him. And that was like part of our enjoyment was watching him try to see if he could handcuff this, I don't know if she was like from UW Milwaukee or somebody, and he could never do it.
That's great.
So I was kind of like Jeremy because of that.
Okay. Okay.
And he was a pretty good player for the Brewers.
He wasn't bad.
And he was very mediocre for the Cubs, but he was what they could afford.
Right, and he was the replacement for Sammy, yeah. too. So.
But so before we go, there's we got some bums on the pitching staff that we haven't discussed, and I'd love to talk about the bums. Got to
mention
one of my all-time favorite Cub relief pitchers, a guy who I always said that if the first tiebreaker for a playoff spot was a spelling bee, the Cubs are in trouble if the other team could pick Roberto Novoa. I don't remember Roberto. Nobody looked dumber than Roberto. Yeah. Roberto Novoa.
Big spot, Bob.
Very yes,
Apex.
Big spot Bob.
Apex called me when he had high hopes for him. It turned out that spot was brown and it was in his pants. Traded for Kyle Farnsworth. The Cubs finally were sick of Farnsworth's inconsistency, dealt him to Detroit and got Novoa. And he showed some flashes early. I remember he had you might have been at this game. It was in Milwaukee. I had a walk off. Bases loaded walk. But,
no, by then I was gone. It was we had him for 2000, 2000.
Oh, right. It's 05. Yeah.
And 2001. Right, so, we stuck around for the second year to get All-Star game tickets.
Glad we name checked Novoa.
Yeah. This was the second Cub stint for the great Will Omen. No, this was the first. This was the first because the second one was with Lou. And he had the famous, I go out there, got a relief pitcher who can only throw the ball 55 feet.
Everybody hated that guy. He was so glib, and he just tried to chum up.
Even his teammates didn't like Will.
He tried to warm up to reporters. He was a fucking moth. He was a sunflower. And Oscar Acosta called him out on it, while he also called out Zambrano because Zambrano. But yeah, Omen always struck me as a suspicious guy, and he really wasn't that good. So the hell with him. But definitely remember him.
Sergio Mitre. Was it 2005?
Let's move on. I don't even want to talk about him.
Was 2005 the year Mike Reminger broke his finger between the two chairs? I think that was 04.
It
seems like a 2004 thing.
It does. We'll look it up. If we're wrong, we'll amend it.
Your favorite relief pitcher, Todd Wellmeyer.
Ooh, shoulders.
Had a 6.12 ERA for the 2005 Cubs. Rich Hill had a cup of coffee. Like I said, he made four starts.
Yep.
Six relief appearances. Do you remember Cliff Bartosz?
Vaguely.
11 walks in 19 innings. He'd fit right in. The Rex brothers of the 2005 Cubs.
Yeah, and the score had a producer named Joel Bartosz at the time. That's why I kind of probably remember that. So
John Karanka pitched in four games.
Did he not throw a shutout in the Dodger Stadium or a complete game? I think he may have, but we don't need to look it up. Those of you at home are welcome to. He did something against the Dodgers, and it wasn't allow a 48-pitch at-bat to Alex Cora with 44 foul balls that Matt Clement did.
Let's see. He made three starts and four appearances. He had a game finished.
That's it? Okay.
It could be.
Somehow I associate him with a Dodger Stadium, but I could be wrong.
Former Red Sox All-Star closer Scott Williamson. Remember, he was always trying to come back from ripping his shoulder in nine pieces.
As much as we rip on Dempster, that signing was a good one by Henry because he was injured. He was a young pitcher for Florida.
Yeah, Tommy John disease.
He got traded to the Reds down the stretch. He got Tommy John disease, and he was out for a while. Cubs bought him on the cheap, brought him along as a reliever, and it worked in spite of his epic pant shittings, but he was effectively on balance a good pitcher. They tried the exact same thing with Williamson, and it didn't quite work out the same.
Speaking of sore-armed relief pitchers, Chad Fox. This was the year that Dusty finished off his career. Jermaine Van Buren.
Who qualifies if you're keeping track of Cub pitchers whose last name is the same as a street in Chicago that's within 6 miles of Wrigley Field. That's about all I can think of with Jermaine Van Buren. And the fact that he was an African-American with a very Dutch last name. So it's one of those ones where you read about in the minors and then you see him and you just have to sort of
recalibrate. He was one of those guys who was, if I remember right, I got to look this up quick. He was a big dude. Nah, he wasn't that big. 6'1", 220. He looked like he would throw really hard and he couldn't. He was very effective in the minors, and he just knew that shit wasn't going to work in the big leagues, and it didn't.
Okay.
And then the original John Lester.
Yeah.
The Iceman.
The Ice, L-E-I, the British spelling.
Yep.
Like the county in L-E-I-C-E-S-T-E-R, and that's how they pronounce that in England is Lester.
And then this would have been the end of the road for one of our favorite Cub relief pitchers. Of all time, at least for the Cubs. He then went on to pitch for the Marlins and a couple of years with the Indians, Sweaty Joe Borowski.
God bless him.
Who basically had, he had one season in the sun.
He did. Well, two, if you count the rare start in 2002 when it was so hot and sunny out that he lost 86 pounds of sweat on the mound. Yeah. And hence earning the nickname Sweaty Joe.
Well, I remember in 2001, he showed up for one game.
This was 2001. This is the game I'm talking about.
And he gave up a home run to Barry Bonds that is still traveling.
Yep.
He gave up six runs in an inning and two thirds.
But the
Cubs didn't come back and win, so we don't remember it as finally as the Brian Mattis game.
Right, but the camera is a national TV televised game, and the camera showed him at one point, and there was just literally just not a drop of sweat falling off the brim of his head. It was a leakage sprung, and there was just a whole cascade of sweat just falling off his.
Well, and that clearly stuck with us because he was Sweaty Joe from then on. Although, if you watch, I did those rewatches last year when there was no sports going on, and Game 3 in Florida is a really fun game to rewatch.
I love it.
I remember thinking at the time the Cubs are actually going to go to the World Series because they won a game they never win. They blew a lead and then in a playoff game and you knew they were going
to
lose.
And down to the last play when they almost botched the play but Castillo overran.
Ramos bobbles the ball and Luis Castillo basically runs right to it.
that was the game where we were hanging our hats on. No, it's different. Yep. They won that game.
And then they win the next day because Aramis hits the grand slam.
Yeah.
And you think, holy shit. And then all hell broke loose for the next 13 years.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, remember this crap at its finest. A bad team full of bums that is just as much fun to talk about as the good teams with the good players.
I agree. I had fun, and I like to think we covered it all. I'm, you know, it's funny. We started it, and I was kind of struggling early on to find specific facts, and I did pull up the game schedule, and I'd see some names, and eventually things came back because a lot of things did happen. Greg Maddux got his 300th win. You know, we didn't really mention Pryor, but he did take that one.
We got the 3,000 strikeout. The 300th win was the year before.
Also
against the Giants.
But in San Francisco.
And the worst part of that was because it was a Fox game, Tom Brenneman was on the call.
But what was our alternative?
Well, that's right, Chip. Oh, I guess that was good. He could have yelled, "Here comes the hook," for no reason. Although the 300th win is a weird thing because
he's not on the mound for it.
Yeah, he'd been in the clubhouse for four innings.
Yeah.
And, remember, and the Cubs, it was this weird, we can talk about this in 04, it was this weird assortment of relief pitchers who managed to shut out the Giants for the rest of the game to get him his 300th win. Right. If you look back at the box score, you're like, how the fuck did those guys do that? But they did.
I look forward to diving into that when we do 04. One last fact we are remiss to mention is our good friend Len Casper. It was his first season as a broadcaster in 04 because Chip was gone after that. And he's did that up until last season, which allowed him to serve as the Cubs TV broadcaster for a longer period of time than Harry Carey. Not that Harry did it that long, but, you know, it was iconic.
Well, Len didn't die, so that helped. Whatever happened to Len? Does he still work?
I don't know. I was trying to find my Les Grobstein on the radio the other night, but I stumbled across Len Casper sound announcing hearing highlights of a Sox game. I don't know. That can't be.
I literally have not heard him do even a highlight of the Sox.
He's actually been on TV a little bit. They've already mixed that up a little.
That was a big part. And it's very clear that the long-term plan is when Stone is done, it's going to be Lennon Benetti in the booth.
One of those non-jocks will be the color guy.
And it'll be really good because the two of them are both really good.
That's a good call.
But I'm not going to listen because fuck the White Sox. But I literally haven't heard him. So not that anybody cares but me and Len. But I had a long-running tradition with him. That on the day of opening day every year, I would email him, and it was the same thing every year, no more, no less. And the subject of the email would be good luck, and when you open it up, it said, "We're all counting on you." And I sent it for like 10 years in a row. And so this year, I sent it to him again, and I wrote, "Good luck," and when you open it, it said, "They're all counting on you." And I just got a two-word reply, "Well played," from Glenn. Yeah. So.
Is that Eric Stratton? Is that his line?
No, that's Leslie Nielsen in the Walking
in
the Cockpit.
Oh, dude, I confused it with Animal House for some reason. Da-da-da. You're right. My bad.
Well, poor Ted Stryker. Talk about Sweaty Joe. Ted Stryker. Look, we're all counting on it.
All right.
So the 2005 Cubs are in the book.
Chalk off another mediocre season. I could do a few more of those before we sink our teeth back into some fun ones.
Well, it's all for the wheel.
It's all for the wheel. We give the fealty to the wheel.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Andy.
Many of us have herpes.